commandment with a promise that it will go well with you, that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Good morning. Let me join Michael and Marty and the rest of our congregation in many ways in congratulating our seniors. I know it seems odd to be doing that on Father's Day, and it made it a challenge to come up with a sermon to combine seniors and fathers, and I couldn't do that, so I'm going to go with fathers because I know a lot of things have already been said about seniors as it is June and not the traditional time, but I certainly want to congratulate them, and my heart goes out to them in how the last several months of their senior year was certainly not what they expected, and I know many of them missed out on many things that they traditionally would have received, but we didn't want them to miss out on this day of being able to honor them, and so we're glad we're able to do that and appreciate you taking the time to honor them as well. Each family has set up a table in the foyer. I would encourage you to not just go out the other exits, but to take just a few minutes and go out and see those tables and see many of the accomplishments and that the seniors have had. If you have a card or something from them, you can leave that on the table for them. And also, we'll have a video, which is very well put together, at the close of our service, immediately following our closing prayer. I want to think today as well about fathers, and want to wish all the fathers out there a happy Father's Day. I know that this is also a special day. And so we weren't able to have Mother's Day here in our church building. We had to do that online. And, of course, we still have many watching online, but we are glad we're able to have Father's Day. And on Mother's Day, I talked about faith moms. And here on Father's Day, I want to talk about faith dads. There was a book that I used to read some to my children when they were younger, just a little book I got for free one time on Kindle, called My Dad is a Superhero. And I like this book. This is what I wanted to emphasize to the kids, right? My dad's a superhero. When they were young, you could kind of get this across on them, you know, and it talked about the idea that my dad is a superhero. He'll fly me into my room, how a dad would carry a child in the room. And my dad has X-ray vision. He always knows where I'm hiding when we play hide and seek. My dad is a superhero because he can hold his breath underwater for a long time when we're swimming together. My dad is a superhero because he can carry me around when we're at the zoo and my legs grow real tired and I can't walk anymore. My dad is a superhero because he can run beside me when I'm trying to learn how to ride my bike and help my bike to stay straight and not fall over. And it goes on with little things like that. My dad's a superhero. Well, as I thought about that, as this book is, of course, not read to my children as much now as they've gotten older, because I think they figured out their dad's not a superhero, right? When they become teenagers, dads become ancient relics in some ways, I would say. And hopefully as they get older, dads become respected, wise, but also humans and people that they love and appreciate. We think about what a dad should be, though. I think all of us realize that dads aren't superheroes, but we do want to be faith dads. And when we think about what is a faith dad, what's a, not a superhero dad, but what's a faith dad? And there's many characteristics that we could pick, but I have four things that I know I need in my life, and I want to try to add to my life, and four things that I believe the fathers here should want to add to their life as a faith dad. And the first thing is, each of these have a biblical character associated with it, is that a faith dad has the tenderness of Joseph. The tenderness of Joseph. When you think about Joseph in his life back in the book of Genesis, his story is recorded in chapters 37 through the end of the book of Genesis. And if you remember his story, he was sold into slavery out of jealousy from his brothers because he was dad's favorite. But when he goes into slavery, he's carried off down to Egypt, a long ways from home, and he becomes a slave in Potiphar's house, and he rises to prominence in Potiphar's house. But when he's in Potiphar's house, Potiphar's wife begins to have longing eyes for him, and she ends up trying to actually seduce him. But when he flees, she accuses him of rape. So then he has to be put in prison. And while he's in prison, he has to spend a long time there, and actually even 2 years longer after he had interpreted two dreams of the baker and the butler. But he's still in prison until finally they remember him when Pharaoh has a dream, and he interprets Pharaoh's dream, and he's allowed to now become second in charge of Egypt. Now, when you think about the life of Joseph, what's remarkable about his life is that he did not become bitter, he did not become resentful, and he's still able to stay tender. In fact, we see that he is going to be a man of tears throughout this passage. For example, in chapter 42, verse 24, when his brothers who had sold him into slavery come down to Egypt to get grain, because he was the administrator over the grain, because there had been 7 years of plenty and now 7 years of famine. Verse 24 says, he turned away from them and wept. In chapter 43, 29 through 30, when they're down again, he's going to weep when he sees his brother Benjamin. Verse 30 says, he hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep, and he entered his chamber, and he wept there. And then in chapter 45, the beginning of that chapter, after he has heard Judah's speech about how Judah says, I will offer myself, basically, in exchange for Simeon, or in exchange for Benjamin, Joseph will then say, make everyone go out from me, verse 1. So no one stayed with him. When Joseph made himself known to his brothers, he wept aloud. And he said to his brothers, verse 3, I am Joseph. He revealed himself to them, and each time he did so, when he saw them, he was moved with compassion and tears. Joseph was a man who was forgiving, because he was tender. He was a man who could have had resentment. He could have become hardened. And sometimes I see, and we think about sometimes the image of an older father maybe who's become hardened. Maybe a young man who isn't loving to his children because he's hardened. Maybe because of past things in his life and past hardships in his life, and he's hardened toward his children. Joseph was a man of tenderness. When I think about Paul, Paul was a man of tender nature, as he was one who had high expectations, but he writes to his children in Thessalonica in chapter 2, and he says this, but we were gentle or tender among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become dear to us. In 2 Corinthians 6, verse 11, he says, my heart is wide open. Paul was tender. Now, he was also tough. Paul had a direct, kind of confrontational attitude with his children in the faith. He could hit them straight on with what they needed. He could be very direct, but he also could be loving. In fact, Paul compares himself to a father and a mother in the descriptions that he gives about how he could be disciplinarian as a father, but he also could have that tenderness that we should have as fathers. And so Paul was tender. When you think about faith dads, we should be tender. In Colossians chapter 3, Paul writes and he says about our relationship in the home. Notice how he emphasizes the idea of tenderness. When he says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Be understanding, 1 Peter 3:7. Be loving to your wives. Don't be harsh to them. And then he says this, verse 21, fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. New American Standard says, do not exasperate your children. I think the idea is, be understanding of what your child has and the abilities they have and the talents they have and the expectations that's reasonable to put upon that child at that given age. Don't be too hard upon them. It says, don't exasperate them. Don't provoke them to anger. Be understanding. In Ephesians 5:29, when it's referring to the husband's relationship to the wife, it says, nourish and cherish her. When you think about real dads that we want to be, or faith dads that we want to be, it involves the tenderness of Joseph. To not be harsh because life has hardened us. Because you may have to be tough at work, but when you come in to your wife and to your kids, don't treat them just like an employee at work. Be tender to them. Be kind to them. Be loving. Cherish and nourish and treat them at the level that they're at as a child. You're going to treat a 3-year-old different than you are a 10-year-old. You're going to be understanding of that. You're going to be someone who's tender. I read a story about a dad who, when his freshman in college daughter was away from home and she had broken up and gone through a real hard time with her boyfriend that she'd had for a while, and rather than just dismissing that and saying, well, you know, it's just an emotional daughter thing or it's just a boyfriend thing, you'll get over it, he drove up and went into her room and sat with her and listened to her and let her just cry on him as he gave her a big hug. Tenderness. It's not just the tenderness when they're little, but tenderness throughout life. We need the tenderness of Joseph. We need the leadership of Moses. The leadership of Moses. When you think about how the Bible describes Moses in Hebrews chapter 11, it describes him as a leader who is going to guide the children of Israel through the wilderness. In verse 23 and following, notice the faith of Moses. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edicts. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt. Notice this. For he was looking toward his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood, so that the destroyer, the firstborn, might not touch them. By faith the people crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. Moses was a leader of God's people because he was willing to suffer reproach and struggles with them. He chose to reject the passing pleasures of sin and suffer with the people of God. In Acts chapter 7, it describes him as a leader that is going to lead the children of Israel. When you think about the parallels or the pattern that is set by Moses, it parallels what a father's job is today, that is raising children. Because Moses, his leadership was about influencing the children of Israel, to attain a specific goal. And that's what leadership is. Leadership is exerting influence to move others toward a specific goal. Now, think about Moses. His goal was the promised land. Promised land. He took them in the land of sin, Egypt, and he had to get them to the promised land. But in the middle, he had 40 years of back and forth, wandering around. complaining, murmuring, griping, all kinds of struggles. His challenge was to get them from Egypt to the promised land through the years of wandering. And that's a pattern that is seen in the book of Hebrews. It's the pattern that's seen in the Gospels. It's the pattern that we find in the Bible as kind of an analogy for all of our lives, isn't it? That we are going through this life. This is the land of wandering. This is the time of the wilderness where we have temptation, where we have struggles, where we have complaints, and we have all kinds of challenges out there. And we're wandering in this time period, and we've got to maintain the faith to get us where? To the promised land. And what God has given fathers to help lead their family through these years of wandering. And so God give us leaders like Moses. We need leaders who keep the goal in mind, who keep the main thing. He dealt with criticism, and you may have to deal with criticism of the world. Criticism, even by some of your children when they're teenagers. Dad, you're not doing this right. I don't agree with what you're thinking. You're old-fashioned in this. You may have some challenges. There may be some murmuring sometimes. But a father has to keep the goal in mind. Philippians chapter 3, verse 14, pressing toward the goal of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. A father is a leader who keeps the goal in mind. And the goal for our families should be to lead our family to heaven, to lead ourselves to heaven. A couple weeks ago, Michael and I, maybe 3 weeks ago, we looked at that passage from Philippians 3, and it's still available on our Seven Oaks Facebook page, where we studied out, and that's the whole thing we talk about for 45 minutes is Philippians 3. There, that goal that all of us should have of, number one, getting to heaven, and secondly, influencing others for Jesus to take them with us to heaven. That's the goal. We need the leadership of Moses. The leadership that leads us through the wilderness, the temptations of this world, and keeps the goal in mind. We need the decisiveness of Joshua. The decisiveness of Joshua. Back in the book of Joshua, we see that when he becomes the leader of the children of Israel, God tells him in verses 5 through 9 to be strong and very courageous, to not turn away to the right hand or the left hand from the book of the law, but to obey and meditate upon the book of the law, and to be strong and courageous. In the book of Joshua, we see that he is going to be decisive all throughout the book. He was decisive as a military leader. You know, one of the key things for being a successful military leader, if you've studied much military history, is that a military leader had to be decisive. I'm mindful of Lincoln's generals and how Lincoln had constant trouble getting his generals to be decisive. In fact, one time he said about McClellan, he said, "I will come and hold your horse if it means you will go into fighting." He wanted them to make a decision. He wanted them to do it. And it wasn't until he finally found a man like that in Grant that he was able to really define a general that he worked well with. Because Grant wasn't always making the right decisions, but he was willing to make a decision and go forward. Joshua, in the book of Joshua, was that kind of general. That's really what Joshua was. He was a military leader who's going to lead the children of Israel into the land of Palestine, into the land of Israel, to clear house, to clean out the house of all these Canaanites and these pagans who were there. And Joshua is going to be a decisive leader all throughout the book of Joshua. And so it's no surprise then when you come to the end of the book of Joshua, after he has divided up the land, in those chapters that we tend to skip, where he divides all the land out, and then he comes to that great section of the book of Joshua, when he then says to the children of Israel, as they're looking over the land, and now they're about to all go to their land, and he says to them this, remember that they've now accomplished what their generation was to accomplish. And he says this, "Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers, which they served in the region beyond the river, the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He was decisive in calling the people to make a choice. You see, why do we sometimes want to abdicate this role? Why do fathers want to give up this role of making decisions that lead us closer to Christ? For example, decisions like, are we going to go to church? Are we going to be a part of events the church is doing? Are we going to study our Bibles? Don't give those decisions up just to the children. Say, well, do you want to go to Bible class today? No, fathers, that's your decision. Church, having Bible class, we're going to be in Bible class. Don't abdicate that role. Sometimes when it comes to other things, for example, when it comes to how we control the media in our home, whether it be all the different things, the kind of movies we watch, the kind of things we allow in our through our internet or on our phones, or what we allow our children to watch and view on their phones, don't allow the children to just set their own boundaries. And don't always put it on the moms to make all those decisions. Fathers, be decisive. This is something that we as fathers can struggle with. We can become too comfortable. We can lack confidence. We can try to avoid risk. Sometimes we're lazy. It's easier just to let others do it. Maybe we don't want to have conflict with our children. But we need to be willing to say, I believe this is best. This is what God wants us to do. We're going to do it. When I have studied leadership, one of the interesting things that I found in a book that was talking about for businesses making decisions and things, and a lot of the research they did, is that when businesses or groups have problems, and when they have a team of people that have to get together and decide how to handle that problem, they found this. They found that most of the groups that made a decision turned out better than those who did not make a decision, but just simply talked about it and discussed it and all lived with that the problem for months on end. That you were far better to go ahead and make a decision and do your best with that. And so what I say to us fathers, and what I think God wants us in our homes to be, pray about it, think about it, discuss it, make a decision. It's not always going to be the, quote, best decision, but it will be better than not making a decision. Generally better than not making a decision. Generally the best decision is the one that is made, rather than the one that is just always talked about but never done. And that leads me to the next point, and our final point. If we're going to have the decisiveness of Joshua, we need the wisdom of Solomon. We need the wisdom of Solomon. In 1 Kings chapter 4, 29 through 34, the Bible describes the wisdom of Solomon. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand of the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan. He lists off these men that he's wiser than. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Verse 34, and the people of the nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. When you think about wisdom, wisdom is simply applied knowledge. It's taking the knowledge we have and applying it in a good, applicable, best way. That's what wisdom is. Wisdom is saying, all right, this is what I know. This is best how to do what I know. You know, a lot of people are good at knowing, but not very good at doing. Wisdom is practiced. It is done. And so we need to understand that we ought to seek the will of the Lord. In Hebrews chapter 5, it says something that's very helpful when it comes to wisdom. And I think us men and all of us should consider in verse 14. When it said, but solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. That's what wisdom is. It's having our powers of discernment trained by constant practice. We have constant practice of trying to put the wisdom of God into our life. And it's to discern what is good versus what is evil. To separate good from evil. And so we need the wisdom of Solomon. We need wisdom to raise our children in this world. We need wisdom of how to counsel our children. Wisdom of how to best love our wives. Wisdom of how older men need the wisdom of how to lead the church or how to counsel younger men or how to be grandparents. Wisdom of how to fulfill their roles that they are in now. We need wisdom to know when to listen and when to give advice. We need wisdom to know when to decide and when to give in to someone else. We need wisdom. And so in James chapter 1, verse 5, fathers need to pray for wisdom. Pray for wisdom. The Bible promises that He will give us wisdom when we ask for it in faith. We need the wisdom of Solomon. When I think about my book, my dad is a superhero. Once again, I ask the question, our children are going to learn pretty early on that we're not superheroes. But I hope that they will always know that we are a faith dad. When your children think about you, Father's Day 20 years from now, do you want them to think of you as a faith dad? If you do, you've got to live your faith now. You've got to have a faith now. And you've got to allow that faith to be seen as you follow Jesus Christ at this time. This morning, if you're not a child of God, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, we would love to assist you in doing that. If you need to rededicate your life and you want to put Christ back as the first priority of your life, then we would love to help you do that. Come as together we stand and as we sing.